Chapter 9. Looking Unto Jesus. August 15, 1902. Last night I had a wonderful experience. I was in an assembly where questions were being asked and answered. I awoke at 1 o'clock and arose. For a time I walked the room, praying most earnestly for clearness of mind, for strength of eyesight, and for strength to write the things that must be written. I entreated the Lord to help me to bear a testimony that would awake His people before it is forever too late. My soul was drawn out in the consideration of matters relating to the future carrying forward of God's work. Those who have had little experience in the beginning of the work often err in judgment in regard to how it should be advanced. They are tempted on many points. They think that it would be better if the talented workers had higher wages, according to the importance of the work they do. But one of authority stood among us in the assembly in which I was present last night, and spoke words that must decide the question. He said, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of your faith, trace His work after He assumed humanity, and remember that He is your pattern. In the work of soul-saving, His divine human life in our world is to be your guide. He made the world, yet when He lived on this earth, He had not where to lay His head. Were the most talented workers given higher wages, those who do the more laborious part of the work would desire larger wages also, and would say that their work is just as essential as any work that is done. Work is to be carried forward in many lines. New territory is to be annexed. But no Jerusalem centers are to be made. If such centers are made, there will be a scattering of the people out of them by the Lord God of heaven. The work of God is to be carried on without outward display. In establishing institutions, we are never to compete with the institutions of the world in size or splendor. We are to enter into no confederacy with those who do not love or fear God. Those who have not the light of present truth, who are unable to endure the seeing of Him who is invisible, are surrounded by spiritual darkness that is as the darkness of midnight. Within, all is dreariness. They know not the meaning of joy in the Lord. They take no interest in eternal realities. Their attention is engrossed by the trifling things of earth. They make haste unto vanity, striving by unfair means to obtain advantages. Having forsaken God, the fountain of living waters, they hew out for themselves broken cisterns that can hold no water. Let it not be thus with those who have tasted the power of the world to come. Sow the seeds of truth wherever you have opportunity. In establishing the work in new places, economize in every possible way. Gather up the fragments, let nothing be lost. The work of soul-saving must be carried on in the way that Christ has marked out. He declares, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Only by obeying this word can we be His disciples. We are striving for a kingdom and a crown. We shall obtain both by wearing Christ's yoke and learning of Him. "Follow my example," He says. "Take my yoke upon you, and learn of me, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." We are nearing the end of this earth's history, and the different lines of God's work are to be carried forward with much more self-sacrifice than they have yet been. The work for these last days is a missionary work. Present truth, from the first letter of its alphabet to the last, means missionary effort. The work to be done calls for sacrifice at every step of advance. The workers are to come forth from trial purified and refined, as gold tried in the fire.